Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Sessions by SE podcast. My name is Aaron, and I will be your host today. September is coming up really quickly, which means another cohort of software engineers is entering the University of Waterloo. This podcast is specifically meant for these incoming SE cohorts and what they should expect out of first year. Joining me today is Arena.
Hi, everybody. I'm in software, and I'm really excited to talk to you.
And Talia.
Hi, everyone. I'm Talia, and I'm ready to share some of my experiences with you guys.
And Zheng Mao.
Hi there. I'm Zheng Mao, and I'm really looking forward to this podcast as well.
So let's start off a year ago. All of us were probably super excited, and we were also all really, really nervous about joining SE. So what were you guys thinking about when you were entering Waterloo?
It was like the whole, to be honest, the whole summer was kind of like a big wave of imposter syndrome, which I think, yeah, a lot of people feel. But at the time, like, I felt like nobody else would feel as much as I did for such a long period of time, like the whole summer. So that's just my experience.
No, like, honestly, Talia, I was going to say, me too. I didn't even tour the engineering buildings when I toured Waterloo because I didn't think I was going to get in. Like, we skipped them. I just, like, applied to software to see if I could. It was, like, a reach. So the summer before, yeah, I was like, oh, we don't even need to go look at pretty, like, E7 because, like, I'm not going to go there. But I think it was, like, super – I was so nervous, and it was very – like, intimidating. I would, like, go in the group chat sometimes, and I was just, everybody seemed very accomplished, especially, like, in the tech space, and I felt like I wasn't. I don't know about you, Zheng Mao.
I felt the same way, pretty much. I sort of also applied just sort of as a reach, so I wasn't really expecting to get in. I was kind of working the summer before, so, like, I actually didn't think about it too much, but as it, like, got closer, like, I was thinking the same, because, like, everybody did seem so accomplished, so I was just sort of thinking about, like, oh gosh, like, I hope I can sort of be a part of this.
Like, I was working, and I was also, like, I had, like, a vacation and everything, so I didn't really think about it until, like, the week before. And then suddenly everything hit. I'm like, oh God, like, moving to a different province.
Software.
Yeah.
I know. It's like Waterloo software. Everybody kind of like hypes it up.
Yeah. So actually one of the big questions that we got from, like, I released a form a couple weeks ago, just asking first years if they have any burning questions for us. And there are some questions that came up frequently. And one of them was, how do I prepare myself for software engineering the summer before? What do you guys think? Is there a point in preparing? Is there something you should actually look into before you go in? Like, what do you guys think?
I would actually, like, going into university, there is that anxiety of, like, wanting to do as well as possible and, like, feeling that everybody else is so accomplished. Like, you have to go, go, go. I would actually, like, advise against, like, preparing academically for school. Just because, like, it's going to be, like, 5 years, like, nonstop, like, school, co-op. Well, it's like a month now, but like this is like the last month that you have to sort of just like take a break and relax. Yeah, so I would just say like sort of just chill out, like work on yourself, work on a hobby or something, but just mostly take that time to just relax and just conserve the energy that you have.
Can I say something, Aaron? I feel like this is funny because when I thought about this question, I actually disagree with you, Zheng Mao, like, respectfully. I think I agree 100% on the fact that, like, you should relax. It's very stressful to know that, like, we don't have summers anymore. But I think I actually found that, like, come the middle of 1A, I was wishing that I had gone back to the summer and at least, like, read a bit of my notes over the summer. Or, like, for CS, if you don't have a CS background from high school, like, I had never taken a CS course before software. Like, I took ICS 2.0, like, Visual Basic, and that's it. I had coded, like, for jobs, but I would recommend if you don't have, like, formal coding experience, it's worth it to, like, look into a Udemy course on, like, basic searching, sorting, algorithms, like, fights, fits. Like, I know it's simple. I know it's, like, easy if you know it. But if you don't, the imposter syndrome and just, like, the idea of being behind can hit you really hard and fast in 1A. So I agree, like, you should relax. But if you feel like you might be behind, it's worth, like, validating yourself and just being like, okay, do I know everything? Like, I would have learned an SCS course in high school. So, yeah, Udemy, I would recommend.
I feel like after Arena voiced her opinion, like, before, I was agreeing with Yang Mao. But I guess if you haven't taken, like, any CS course before, then it probably would have been a good idea to do, like, at least have some small, like, videos online to look at or something, like what Arena was suggesting. Because, yeah, there is that imposter syndrome, especially if you haven't done those courses. And Arena seems like she knows what she's doing in class, so.
I'm happy it seemed that way. I don't think it was in reality that way.
I think I actually, I'm on the fence between this, between Jing Mao and Arena and Talia. I think, yeah, if you don't have CS background, then yeah, it's pretty important that you at least, like, know something, like a basic language or something like that. But I also think one of the biggest shifts is, like, preparing for learning by yourself, right? Like, in high school, things were given to you, right? You knew, like, oh, this is the assignment I have to do. These are the things I have to do to get a good mark. But university is very, very, like, very different. So I think an online course can also help you learn, like, how do I actually approach learning by myself? I think that's a really important skill that, unfortunately, we don't have in high school because it's just given to us. But, yeah. Actually, that was going to be my second question because, you know, a lot of the first years, they want to know what is the transition like from high school to university. And often we hear from upper years like, oh, it's a huge change, but we don't really know why or how. And if there is a transition for you guys, how exactly did you deal with it? And what would you have done to make that transition smoother?
Can I start off with this one? Okay. So in high school, I think probably everyone in software had this mentality. Like, I was very grade focused. Like, I thought academics were, like, the most important thing. And then when I went to university, especially in software, I think that side projects and, like, your employability, your resume are more important than your academics. So even in first year, like, even though I had that knowledge of what was more important now, it was hard for me to make that transition because I was already so used to being academics focused. So I guess if I were to go back, then in the summer before, I guess this is going back to your previous question, that in the summer before 1A, I would have spent a little bit of time on a side project.
I mean, there is, like, a period of time where it's, like, a little bit uncomfortable, maybe even a little bit overwhelming. I would say, like, the entirety of first term, I think you just feel a little bit battered by everything that you have to do. As for, like, the transition, I mean, it's more something, like, academically, it's more something that you just have to grit through. I think what's more important is the lifestyle. So, like, really learning to, like, take care of yourself and, like, making friends outside of class and stuff like that. I think that really helps with, like, transitioning over.
And in terms of, like, a transition tool, so I will say that I think a big, big, big thing I learned about academics and life in university is that mileage varies, like, crazy. Like, we could all be in the same program, but our experiences individually could be, like, radically different from each other. And you kind of have to reconcile that. Like, you can hear about us, you can take our tips, but I think that you're the one who decides how you use them, and everybody will use them differently. I found my transition really, really difficult because I had prepared for, like, a life science kind of university curriculum. So I knew a lot about chemistry, but, like, nothing about, like, Linalgs or Calc. Like, I knew it, but I didn't, like, really know. And so for me, my biggest tip is, like, reach out for help early and, like, don't be shy. Like, I had to get tutors. I had to find, like, resources. I had to go to so many different places until I could find a fit for me. And up until that point, I felt like I just wasn't good enough. And I realized I wasn't getting the help I needed. And as like Talia said, a lot of us are really, really good learners in high school, and we're not used to asking for help or not understanding things. But I think that that's a big part of like trying something new. You're coming to software to learn, and part of that is learning how to learn. So yeah, that's my 2 cents on academics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, plus one to that, because like having a support community is incredibly important. I think that's like the first thing you should try to do when you get into university, like make a lot of friends, not just from SC, but also from other programs, because it can get kind of tiring just having SC friends and like talking about your CS assignments. Like sometimes just need to remove yourself from that environment. So yeah, support and mental health is also like really, really important to do. But I wanted to kind of talk about something that all three of you mentioned briefly, which is how your time management and study skills also changed from high school. Like for me personally, I remember like it was linear algebra, math 115. Like the prof and the lectures was like going over my head. I didn't really know what was going on in class, and I was just using my previous high school experiences too. And I remember my first quiz, like I did poorly, so I knew I had to change. So I started to do like pre-reading and all those other techniques. So similarly, did you guys have any sort of techniques or changes that you had to make to your own study habits to do well in university?
I actually can speak to this with a really cool lens. I actually had access. There was this one prof in our year, and she had, like, the best notes. She would publish them on her Learn website, which everybody has access to within the course. And I actually was able to reach out to her for tutoring for Math 115. She couldn't, like, it was so cool. She couldn't explicitly, like, help, but she was tutoring me in other things. And it was just she helped me develop a mindset towards learning math in particular because she taught the course. And the biggest tip that I would say this isn't really a time management, it's more of like a study tip, but like practice problems, and particularly like the way that they structure exams in math courses is like they'll look at the quiz problems that people did the worst on. So like pull your friends on who did that and what questions on the quizzes, and then practice those, because our final for our linear algebra course, for example, was comprised of a lot of questions that people had done poorly on the quizzes. And that was something you're like, oh, I did that on it. I don't want to do that question again. It like traumatized me. But that's why they put those questions onto the exams. So that's like an insider tip that I think they use in a lot of math courses, and I think ECE too. Otherwise, get a planner. Like 100% you need a planner, or you need some kind of productivity solution, because softwares are like notoriously busy, and if you don't, you'll miss a lot of things and you'll feel bad.
Actually, I was going to say something similar to Arena, where like if you're finding that the professor that's teaching you, maybe you're not following their lectures, then you can try looking into the notes of another professor. But also for CS, I used to be a firm believer of taking notes by hand, but then for CS, the slides kind of go by so quickly. So especially for that course, I would recommend taking notes on a computer, like typing them out, especially like code. It's so much faster to just like copy paste things instead of like writing it out.
For me, I found that like I had to study like a lot more than I did in high school. I think if you find that you're struggling, I think office hours are really underrated. I think people are intimidated by the concept of like seeing their profs eye to eye and having like a one-on-one with them. But like, it is really useful and it is really helpful. One other thing, and you can take this with a grain of salt, but if I found that like someone's lectures weren't helpful, I just wouldn't go. So like, I just wouldn't go to the lecture, and then I would just read the notes on my own. So when Arena mentioned the prof's notes that they posted on Learn that were really helpful, like that really got me through that course.
Yes. Yes. They're colorful notes. Like, look out for them. If you guys have 115, they're the prettiest notes like I have seen from a math course ever.
It was a thing of beauty when I first saw those notes. There was one person actually asked like if there's any book recommendations for this, and actually one book that helped me a lot in university is How to Become a Straight A Student by Cal Newport. And it's like chock full with all these strategies that actually many like Talia, Zemao, and Arena had mentioned. So if anyone is interested in reading something, that's definitely a book to read over the summer. So one thing, actually, you guys also mentioned this in the last question, is just like some teachers have a totally different style of teaching. Like ECE 106 and 105 were taught in a very different manner than CS 137 or 138. So how do you guys deal with this shift in teaching?
As for different teaching styles, again, like, I'm not quite the one to go to, because if the teaching style wasn't right for me, I just wouldn't go. But at the end of the day, the common denominator is the assignments and practice problems. And they do post the slides, and, you know, other professors have notes. So really, I guess it's all about learning to be independent of whatever the teaching style is. So studying on your own, making sure that you yourself can understand things conceptually, grinding practice problems, and also like explaining things to your friends. Like if you can get a study group and you can explain things to each other, that's also really cool.
Yeah, I can't name the amount of times Zegma has helped me in 106 with all those electromagnetism problems. But yeah, that's true.
I actually agree. I was going to say that, like, okay, I think that there's something to be said for the fact that sometimes you, like, can't get over the fact that the prof is teaching the course the way they want to teach it. Like, we have cases in our, like, one first year where, like, you just, like, the prof is going to do it that way, and you can't even use the other professor's, like, notes because it doesn't even have anything to do with the way the course is taught. And I think it's a lesson in just life where sometimes you have to sit down and be like, okay, what can I do to do well in this, the best that I can possibly do? And it also means accepting the fact that you're not going to, like, have the outcome be the way you want it to be. I think that, like, in a specific course that we took last semester, I just had to, like, look at, like Zegma said, like the practice problems that were there, the types of solutions that were usually the ones that got the most marks, and like I understood them, and then I just had to do them, and that's all you can do sometimes, and you just have to accept that. A lot of people say like the difference between getting like an 85 and like a 95 is a lot of work. Like if you have to decide if you want to like put that in or if you're gonna leave it, and you're gonna be like, okay, I think I can do well with this, and like just accept the fact that the prof isn't going to accept you. A lot of them are really good, but realistically in life, some people are not. Okay, that's all I had to say.
For me, I think asking the professors for a lot of help, that really helps me. Like, in class, a lot of the times when, I guess for me, when I was asking questions, I felt pretty dumb. But at the end of the day, I think I needed that, so...
Don't worry, Talia, you asked all the questions that I wasn't going to ask. I'd be like, oh, she asked that, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, plus one to Talia's answer, too. Like, asking questions and also listening to other people's questions helped me bridge the differences in teacher styles. But, yeah. Another really popular question that I got was, what are the easiest and hardest courses in 1A and 1B? So, what are your takes on this?
I guess it depends what your background is, because whether you come from like AP, IB, like TOPS, or just like academic, like it'll definitely vary. Like for example, if you've done IB and you've taken HL Math, then for example, 117 and 119 would have been mostly review for you. And I guess the math style in IB kind of also helped me for 135. But then for physics courses, like 105, ECE 105 and 106, and then also ECE 124, I found those to be really difficult because those ones, like, it wasn't like you could drill the problems and then fully understand the material. Like, you had to have an understanding of the concepts.
I do agree with the background thing. I think, like, if you came from, like, a special program, then I think you might already be prepared for certain subject areas more than others. I didn't come through like AP or IB or anything. To be honest, I found everything pretty difficult. The easiest course would have been SE 101. It was the project course. You just had to write a few reflections, and it was designed for you to get like a boost, right? So I thought that was neat. The hardest ones, and I was surprised by this, were like both of the CS courses, so CS 137 and CS 138. On the whole, like I think they were just, a lot of it was not really conceptual. Like a lot of it was like memorizing little details about things, like memorizing different ways to sort things, and also this is a string and this is a C string and you have to remember to put the null character at the end of a C. Like, I don't know. It was just, and also you have to remember all of these commands. You have to study like history. I was, so I thought like a lot of the material was like not great. And also writing code on paper for an exam was just a minefield, just an absolute minefield. Yeah, so I really struggled with that. And then also EC 124, because the assessments were really, really, really difficult.
Really hard. That's an understatement. They were, like, traumatic. I think the 124 assignments, oh, my God. I actually think it was traumatic, because when we left the exam hall, like, collectively, all of SE, like, the what was it, our midterm? Like, I think everybody was, like, going to cry or laugh. It was so funny. And I'll answer your questionnaire. Yeah, 124, 100% was my hardest course. I also thought it was going to be the easiest going in, which is funny. That was, I think, because of the way the course was taught. And, like, that's something that when I had my friends in other, like, other universities tell me they're learning the same stuff as me, but they're getting great grades because it's not that hard to learn, it made me realize that I had to look elsewhere to learn. And then as soon as I did that, the course got easier. I think that the easiest course for me was actually, I really like CS138 because I thought that the exam was hard, but the assignments were really easy to get a good grade on if you just, like, have to work at them and get them to pass all the marmoset cases. And once you did, it was, like, an easy 100. The hardest course for me was also EC 106. That was really, really hard because, like Talia said, it was always unpredictable. Like, you would never know what you would come across on the exam.
I think my ranking would be, my hardest course would be probably 124. And that's more of the assessment than the content. Like, I didn't know what was going on half the time. I think one of the easier courses would be, like, math, calculus courses. Like, if you've done AP calculus, AB or BC, you're, like, totally cool. Like, you should be chilling for first year. But, yeah, well, 124 was definitely a tough one. So, one of the many aspects of this pandemic is remote learning, which we've all experienced for, like, a few months in March and April. What were some of the tips that you have heard from upper years who also went through this, or from people that are currently going through this now in terms of dealing with online learning?
Okay, for me, at first, when we started online learning, I was really tempted to just, like, read the notes and then do the quizzes and think that that would be enough. But then after, like, a couple of weeks, I realized that I would not be able to write a final exam just by doing that. So then I had to treat it as if, like, I was still at school, like, do the practice problems, drill those.
Yeah, I agree. Practice problems was, like, the lifesaver during COVID.
I think that, like, so I'm taking a course right now. I'm taking a summer course. That was my first full online course. It's a fall course that we normally take, like, chemistry. And I have found when a course is completely implemented online, like, we hadn't done one that was fully online, the biggest thing you have to do is, like, create a schedule for yourself and try to follow it, like, really, really well. So what I did with my chemistry course is I'd literally have, like, a day where I sit down and watch the lectures, a day where I do, like, the quizzes, and I, even though, like, they might give you a couple days to do it or a couple days to do the test, like, if you have a rhythm and you have a FaceTime buddy to, like, sit, like, not for the quizzes, but, like, for the homework and assignments, you have somebody to kind of, like, grind them out with and get feedback on. It's almost like you're doing it at school and at the library. And that has really helped me with online. The other tip I have that I got from a professor actually was as you read through the course notes, like Talia said, you like do the related homework problems. So it helps because it's like usually in class they would give you practice problems to do in lectures. I think that really helped in first year. So I try and like replicate that by going and trying the problem from the homework set, following the strategy presented in the notes. And that technique has helped me. Although chemistry is kind of easier in the first place. I don't know what's going to happen in a real term. But
remote learning, I mean, it's not like the most enjoyable thing. And I think the intended audience, like high school students, probably know more about it than us because, I've only had like half a term of it so far, and they've probably been dealing with it As for like any like advice, I think Talia and Irina have already given some really solid tips. Like my wisdom certainly does not extend beyond theirs. I guess I would just like grind practice problems, and then also use the fact that lectures are recorded to your advantage.
I kind of wanted to touch base on something. I think, Talia, you mentioned this during the very first question, how you experienced a shift in the philosophy of marks, right? Like, grades don't matter as much in university. So actually, I'm currently having a tough time, like, getting my philosophy correct. Like, is it actually important? Should I care as much? How do you guys feel about this concept of marks and grades? And, like, how much should a first year care about that?
Yeah, I think I have a good perspective on this. I'm not going to expose myself too much, but I think I have something to say on it. So going into it first year, I heard a lot about how grades don't matter. And I agree to a certain point. I think that at the end of the day, when you're applying for co-op, people will see your grades first. And like in the package that we get, like your grades are literally the first page that you send to the recruiters. And if you have done extremely poorly on a course, I think it does affect the interviews you get. And by extremely poorly, I mean like you almost failed it. You know, like I'm not saying the level of extremely poorly does change in university. Like an 80 is a good mark. Like you get an 80, like you should be happy. But I'm saying that if you do think your grades are low, it could be an indicator that you're not fully understanding the content. And then you have to evaluate if that course is important for your degree and what you want to learn. So if I was doing poorly in a course that doesn't relate to my degree, for example, I don't think electromagnetism is a field I'm going to be pursuing. I was like, okay, it's fine. Like I'm learning, I'm trying my best. It's okay. But the computer science courses, like especially OO, classes, trying to understand inheritance, like I have found in my co-op term that those concepts are like used all the time. Encapsulation is always used. And if you don't know those, then your bad marks might mean you need to be learning it more because you need it for your job. So at the end of the day, my philosophy on grades versus work is you come to the program for a reason. For me, it was to learn as much as I could about coding and technology and then use it as a tool to like learn about the software industry and make an impact. So I look at every course and see how much it influences that outcome, and then I weight the grade appropriately to that. And that's the like philosophy I look at it with. You have to come up with that yourself, I think.
Okay, adding on to what Irina was saying about courses where like you think it's not as important for your degree, for me, like the prime motivating factor for these courses was like the fear of failing them. Because it's like if you fail them, then you have to retake them. So like even if you do poorly, just like pass it, just get it over with.
I really do agree with what Irina said. Beyond like the case where your grades are almost failing or are failing, I don't think there's really a reason to worry about it. I know in high school, marks are like a big deal. I mean, you're really shooting for it and everything is really inflated. But once you get to university, it's a different game. And it does take a while to get out of that mindset. But I think as you go on, like you sort of realize that there are much more interesting and fulfilling and more worthwhile things to pursue than a grade on a transcript. I mean, it really doesn't matter too much unless you're going to grad school. I have heard a lot of things about how they're more important for first co-op, but from what I've seen, it's really not all that true. I know people on like every end of the range and they've all gotten jobs and they're all doing fine and they're all really happy with where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys mentioned something which is interesting. It was Irina, like you said, how you weight courses differently based on how important it is to you or to your future goals. So how do you stick with courses like 105 or 106, which don't mean anything to you? How do you do that?
You cry about it, but then you're like, well, I have to do it for the degree. Like some things are like chemistry. For example, this chemistry course I'm taking has nothing to do with software engineering. Like, some of the prompts are like, so what does this course have to do with software engineering? Like, how can you relate it? And I'm like, you can't relate it. like what? And, but it's like, I think those are, that's why software engineering is software engineering. And it's an engineering program, which means at the end of the day, like, yeah, we're in software, but we're also just trying to become good engineers, good builders, able to solve problems, understanding like the science behind things. So maybe you could like look at UCE 105 like that, like, oh, I'm learning about science. That's the only way I could justify it.
That's what I did too for 105, 106. It's just like, I don't really care about the physics, but I think the problem solving is applicable anywhere. Something I wanted to talk about a little bit was, especially for first years, it's, university is a lot more stressful, and also like anxiety is a big issue. And like our profs mention this all the time, if like, you need help, like come talk to us. But also there's like a certain aspect of mental health, which is on you, right? To like develop yourself, develop that perseverance. How do you guys deal with the stress of software engineering?
I think the cohort system is really valuable for that. The fact that you have like this great close network of people that you can complain to, complain with, and complain again with, and then also fall back on people who are in the same boat as you. So they kind of get what's going on. So I mean, that really helps. The fact that you have a network is already really helpful. Another thing is finding like a hobby to get into. There was this one thing from like this document called like the EC Survival Guide, and they said like devote at least 2 hours every week to a hobby that you enjoy that requires concentration but no intellectual activity. And I think that's like really solid advice. Like, find something that you enjoy doing that's not stressful, find something that you like, have some fun, just make sure to schedule, you know, that fun time in, you know.
I think you have to find some time to exercise. So for me personally, I kind of had like a workout buddy, and we would try to go like every other day just to like work out. And then it's kind of funny because like we'd always complain in the winter about like walking to CMH in shorts while it was snowing. But then that also kind of like wakes you up, and then it gets you into like, it takes you away from the stress of schoolwork. So it's kind of nice having that like that break regularly.
I like, it's so funny because what both of you guys said, like Talia and Zegma, like is exactly what I was going to say, but like together. I think mental health in university can be really, really stressful. Like my philosophy of mental health is like, mental health is health. It is like a part, it's, you know, you have to maintain it all the time. And when you move out, like that's the first time you realize nobody else is going to take care of my mental health. Like, I have to put it first. And almost like about what you're saying, like it's kind of like meditation. Like, you have to find an activity where, like you said, you concentrate. It's almost like meditative. I'm not saying like literally go meditate, but I'm saying find something that does that for you. And also, like what Talia said, taking like a regular break from campus, like the library, from DC basement, from those places that cause you stress, will reduce your stress. For me, I like would take like, I would go off campus. By off campus, like you take the train for 2 minutes and you're off campus, to a spin studio, like a spin, boxing, yoga studio, almost every day. And it was like a safe space for me to kind of relax, to take care of my mental health. I would come back more focused. I made new friends there. I remembered that there are other things to life than coding and job applications when it's a really stressful time. And I think that that is a practice that you have to start early. And that's how I think all of us learn to deal with mental health in a stressful program. Like, you have to take care of it and practice things that would help you do that.
Yeah, another aspect of mental health that a lot of the first year students had mentioned in the forum was imposter syndrome. So the fact that, like, I think at least every other response was about imposter syndrome. Like, how do I deal with it? Which implies it's a pretty big issue with software. Speaking from my perspective, I'm from Alberta, so we don't have many of the opportunities that Ontario students have. So when I came in, I was like, yeah, I'm probably nowhere near as good in coding or programming as compared to the other software engineers. And it took me a while to like get rid of that feeling. How do you guys deal with imposter syndrome?
Okay. I said, but then now I'm regretting that, because I think for me, the imposter syndrome hasn't really left yet. And I feel like it's not like you don't, that's not really a feeling that you can expect to leave. It's something that maybe you have to get used to and to just realize that there will be times where you feel like you are not good enough. But then you also have to realize that when you're seeing all these other people do amazing things, that like everyone feels that way sometimes. And it's not like the people who are accomplishing these things, they feel like that they're better than everyone, if that makes sense. It's like everyone has to go through this.
I actually come to imposter syndrome like from a similar perspective as Talia. I'm a woman, person of color, and I did not think software engineering was going to be the industry I ended up in. And it reflects, I think, in the way that I'm treated and I feel like people perceive me. So it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with and a lot to kind of reconcile internally, and you can feel really conflicted about it. I work on the Women in Computer Science Society, and we do a lot of work to talk to people about where those, like where do they come from? Like, why do you think of yourself as not enough and not the same as everybody else? And I think my biggest tip to deal with imposter syndrome is to have those conversations, like find safe spaces where you're talking to people who also, like Talia said, like have the same feeling as you. And then you feel like, oh my God, you feel the same way as me. Like it's normal. And another tip that's a little bit like not controversial is like maybe you look at the people that you are comparing yourself to and figure out how they got there and figure out what you could be doing to get there. Like a good tip is for me is I will go on LinkedIn and I'll like look up people from Waterloo and see what they have done. And sometimes I'll reach out to them and I'll be like, can I just have a virtual coffee with you and see how you got to the place you are? And at least I feel like I'm doing something to kind of get to the place that other people seem to be doing. So those are two tips I would have.
I thought a lot about this last night when I was writing my notes, and I had this like whole like big response plan, but I think the fact that it's such a common issue can be a point of solace for people who are experiencing it. The fact that like a lot of other people don't feel like they belong, that feeling that you're underaccomplished, it sort of like, it kind of invalidates that because like everybody sort of feels that way at some point. People tend to place a lot of emphasis on how they're doing compared to other people. And I think it's important to remember that being in this program, like the context that you're in, really distorts your perspective a lot, right? Yeah, so, you know, you beat out all of these other applicants, you know, you were at the top of your high school or whatever, and you were on the top of the world. I mean, what happened? I mean, nothing really changed. It's more sort of the context that you're in. And you really need to ask yourself, like, because mostly when it comes to this, it's things like academic performance or co-op performance. And you really have to think to yourself about how much that matters and why that matters so much to you. Why are you mad that the kid next to you is better at trigonometric substitutions on calculus problems? Why are you upset that the kid in front of you is in a different location for like the next whopping 4 months of their life? I mean, it's you know, a lot of people have this image of like what success means, especially with like this program. Like they see themselves like rocking these high grades in Silicon Valley or whatever. But I mean, there's a lot more fulfilling and interesting things to pursue than a mark on a transcript or a wage, you know, or a certain location. And if you don't get your dream company at the ripe old age of 23, I mean, it's really not the end of the world for you. And like, if you got like, I don't know, if you got like a 65 in the midterm, okay, you passed. I mean, would you like tell somebody else that got like a 60 that they don't belong here? If you think that's ridiculous, then maybe you're holding yourself up to a double standard. And if not, then I mean, you probably have to, you know, really reconsider what's important to you and what's meaningful to you.
Wow, very, very well put, Sangmyo. That's awesome. Yeah, so now I'm gonna segue into social life in Waterloo. So, you know, there's the common conception. I don't know if it's a misconception or not, but Waterloo is dead. There's nothing much to do. What do you guys think about that? What can you do to make your, like, the social life in Waterloo amazing as you want it to be?
I love socializing, and like I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that you need to like Sima said, you need to find fulfilling connections, and I think university is the place to do that. You're supposed to be challenged, you're supposed to be developing your like your social beliefs, your political beliefs, and that only happens through socializing and activities. But Waterloo has this horrible, like, misrepresentation as being, like, boring and, like horrible, and everybody told me, they're like, Arena, you're not going to have any social life if you go to Waterloo, like, it's so dead. And, okay, like, I think on some levels, Waterloo, like, if you compare it to other schools that are known as party schools, like, sure, it doesn't have the same party scene, but I think there are so many, like, rich perspectives that come to the school, and you just have to find the social place to interact with them. And I would also just, like, the reason I was smiling so much is because, like, there are parties. Like, I'm not going to say much about this topic, but I think that you have to be a social person. You have to be open-minded. You have to realize Laurier is down the road. Like, there are so many different ways to meet people. And you can't, like, be negative. I think that's my one tip with, like, partying, socializing, is if you show up to a party and you're like, oh, my God, this is horrible. Why are all these people doing this? And you're not talking to anybody and you're standing in the corner, then your perspective on the social life is going to be negative, like, obviously. And you just need to have fun, I think. I think that every place can be fun if you make it fun, and there are definitely cool people at Waterloo, and I'm so lucky that I get to go to school and meet all of these fun people who enjoy having fun, too. So that's my perspective on the social life.
Yeah, I actually wanted to chime in, because I have kind of a different perspective. Like, I guess it depends on what you value. I feel like going into university, there's a lot of misconception that you will always have time to, like, go to parties and to go to these events. And then once you actually get into university and you're like, oh, why am I not having as much fun as people are telling me that I should be having? It's kind of discouraging. But then I think if you try to give yourself more feasible breaks, like, let's just say you go with a friend every week or every couple of weeks to, like, study together at a bubble tea shop, and it's, like, something that you look forward to, then that might be your idea of socializing. And I feel like there shouldn't be any negative, like, misconceptions about that.
I think so. Wait, Aaron, do you have any perspective? I'm interested to know, like, what are your perspectives on social life before Zeng Mao answers?
For me, it was, I had, like, a lot of fun with my dorm. And this is something that's going to suck for the incoming first years. But, like, my dorm group was amazing. We used to pull pranks on everyone. We, like, this is my way of, like, letting off my steam. I think it's really important not just to, like, stick in, like, the SC friend group, but also find people from different programs, like, get different perspectives, have fun. And, yeah, like, don't make life all about studying in co-ops, because that's a life that I would not want.
I think social life at Waterloo is really, really underrated. And I don't know how it got so underrated. The three of you really sort of hit the nail on the head with that. It's totally there if you want it. And there are lots of different groups and activities and amazing little gems hidden all around. Laurier's right across the street. So, I mean, really, I think the onus is on you to have the initiative to sort of get out there and meet people. And like Arena said, never be negative. You know, always be open to new experiences, to talking with people, to, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But one thing I have to comment on is, like, this is going to be 10 times more difficult right now when it's all virtual. Like, how do you guys maintain all these friendships or even make new friendships during an online term? Like, that must be extremely difficult. Does anyone have, like, any cool perspectives on this?
I have, like, one. So this is, again, biased because I'm on Women in Computer Science, but for women in particular, we do a lot of events that are virtual, and we've had, like, pretty good turnout to them, like 40, 50 people to each event, and we're going to be hosting a conference in early September that is going to, like, have, basically, it's going to be, like, a recruitment conference, like, a lot of, like, corporate sponsors are coming, but also, it's, like, a networking session for the students within Waterloo, so we're going to have, like, breakout rooms, we're going to have people talking to each other, it's a platform for you to start to connect to people, even if you're, like, stuck in your bedroom, so I recommend, like, trying these online events. I know that they can seem weird, but, like, the worst case is you, like, turn your camera off or you just, like, close the screen. Like, if you don't like it, you can just leave. But if you go and you meet somebody you like and you start messaging them, maybe you made a new friend.
Yeah, no, I do that all the time with, like, my friends in SC and other extracurriculars back in Calgary. it's like I try to schedule regular Zoom calls or FaceTime, whatever. I'm like, we just chill or hang out. But also one thing that's changed in COVID is that I am now reaching out more to people, like through LinkedIn or through my extracurriculars, like just like cold reach, just ask them questions or and eventually like you get to like this really comfortable position where you have like almost a mentor or someone that you can talk to about anything. And I think that's something that often we don't usually do, like just taking that courage and just putting yourself out there, just messaging someone out of the cold. But I think it's something that a lot of students should start to do, because you can get some really, really interesting perspectives if you start to branch out just in terms of different people. One of the reasons why SESOC started was inter-cohort connections, right? Like a first year can easily talk to a fourth year or a third year, and a second year can network and all. But I like sometimes I feel that our cohort, in like specifically, we don't use that opportunity to talk to upper years. So, and I think one of the major reasons is that no one really explained why that's important. Do you guys have any interesting perspectives on this topic?
I was one of those people that didn't really find as much value in like the connections with upper years. But then after this year, I'm seeing how that could be valuable. Because for me, I used to feel kind of bad for like asking upper years questions. But then I realized that that's okay because they're kind of there to help you, and you can also pass that information on to the years below you. So it's kind of like a chain. And then in my personal experience, for the one of the clubs that I joined, I've asked my lead for academic advice, for course selection advice, and that really helps me. And then it was also kind of coincidental that I'm also subletting next term to one of my former leads.
I met a lot of upper years, not just in SE, but also in CS and also math through like the clubs that I was in. For SE specifically, I hear that using the SE like computer lab in DC is a great way to meet people from other cohorts. That's what I hear. So I think I'll probably take more advantage of that in the future. I mean, they're just great to have around. And also, like they said, they have lots of work experience. A lot of them are where you eventually want to be. So they are like people that you can reach out to and ask questions.
Yeah, I actually like very similar to Talia. I think for me, talking to upper years has been really inspiring and also just like nice to know that a lot of the people we aspire to be are just normal people like us. I had like a particular instance where the club I'm in, I met an upper year who has worked at Microsoft, Deloitte, and Facebook, and she's a year older than me. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I was like, oh my God, like I want to be you, first of all, but I also want to know how you manage to be you. And talking to her and working with her has given me so much perspective on like on managing life as like a co-op and how do you like get to those positions. And also like it's great because you can ask them interview questions, like you'll really get information you wouldn't get elsewhere, and you'll know how to do well. And I think also they're just good friends to have. They have one more year of life on you, one more year of like fun stories to tell you about. And you can make a really good friend out of an upper year. So don't be scared.
You know, my philosophy when it comes to like in terms of just information gathering in general is that the best source of information about where you want to be your career goals is always the person that's actually in that position. And then like articles or books or whatnot are there. But I think meeting first year upper years is incredibly important. And there's also like tons of mentorship programs in Waterloo. Like SE has its own mentorship program that was doing quite well. There's Tech Plus. There's other programs that have mentorship programs. So definitely check those out.
I agree, Aaron. I was going to say that like those mentorship programs can be intimidating to join, but like just do it. I like would say like every first year should do one, because if you don't, you're going to be actually at a disadvantage with all the people who do. Sorry, I had to add that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, mentorship programs are incredibly important. But I think what's really interesting about all three of your responses, to an extent, was your participation in extracurriculars. Like, hopefully by this time, the extracurricular podcast that we were, that it's hopefully released by now. But I do want to talk to you guys specifically about first year extracurriculars. Not only do I think that are super important, but sometimes there is this notion that, you know, like, should I really spend this time doing extracurriculars? Is it really that important? What do you guys think about extracurriculars in particular? And what were some of the interesting things you've done in first year? Zhang Miao, I know you did something cool. You were in a non-technical extracurricular. You did a cappella. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because I think that's super interesting.
Piggybacking off of what you said, I think that is a big question coming into university, like whether you want to devote your time to extracurriculars. And I think the answer is yes. I think you do want to. Because otherwise, like, your life is studying and then eating and then sleeping. I mean, you definitely want a hobby to get invested in, for sure. Yeah, so I did a cappella. I actually didn't really even know that Waterloo had the groups that I joined. I had an upper year friend who was in a cappella, and I thought it was just like a non-audition, like big choir, like whatever, it's chill. And then I went to the info session and there were like so many different groups, and it was this like whole community, and it was just like such a gem. Like, I felt like I had struck gold, so I decided to audition the next day. So that was really exciting. The commitment was about like 5 to 8 hours a week, 10 on the end of term concert night, which is the concert that we do at the Modern Languages Theater. We also do like performances, like, yeah, just lots of little performances, coffee houses, just stuff like that. And it's a really nice community. And it's just such a great like beacon of people from everywhere, all different years, all different programs, all different faculties. You're just going to meet so many cool people from all over the place. And that is something you definitely want as well, is to know people outside of your cohort and across a lot of different years. That's like a big, big plus.
So, okay, I have kind of an interesting story, because joining Waterloo, so the first, sub-team that I joined, after a few months, I guess I kind of realized that it wasn't something that I was as interested in. But then I knew I kind of wanted to get into web dev, even though I had minimal experience in web dev. So it really helped that because I was already in the sub team, I was able to kind of shift effortlessly to a position in the same team where I could pursue that interest. So it's gotten to the point where it's like, because I joined this team, it's impacted what I want to do for my next co-op. So it was really useful in that aspect.
I can talk about Wix for sure, because I've been on it for 8 months now, and I expect I'll probably stay involved for my whole like undergrad career. But quickly, like, for extracurriculars, I think an important thing for people to remember is like, clubs aren't the only way to like, or like formal clubs aren't the only way to like do extracurricular activities. In high school, I feel like a lot of us did like sports and stuff, like, you know, like intramurals or even like a structured sport. And something I'm really passionate about is like trying to keep that rhythm of like a passion or a hobby you're interested in. So like for me, I'm training to become I'm hoping to become a cycling instructor, like a soul cycle kind of instructor at the studio in Waterloo. And I found that hobby like as an extracurricular, and I built that, and it's now becoming something that I would, you know, talk to people in job interviews about, because it's one of my passions. And that's why I think they're important, is because people in industry and just people want to know that you have a life and you have interests. And like Tali and Zhang Miao, and I'm sure you too, Aaron, have all said, like, we all have interests as human beings. Spinning is one of them. So it's really fun. I think anybody listening, if they have any interest in ever coming boxing, spinning, yoga, or like lifting with me, should come and they should reach out to me. But yeah, quickly for Wix, women in computer science, software engineers are in the math and the engineering faculty, so we get to be in both like organizations. Women in computer science is like so valuable. Recruiters come to campus like looking for women, not like in a bad way, just like they want to talk to people, and they have made so many events where you can go listen to how the recruiting works, you can talk to recruiters, you can ask them what questions they ask at interviews. They're also really fun activities run by Wix, and run, if you're in Wix, you get to plan them. We do like free bubble tea almost every term. There's like 6 free bubble tea events. I don't even like bubble tea. Sometimes I do pizza, so I like pizza. And I also just find it so rewarding. I think it depends on the kind of person you are, but a lot of people at Waterloo are really innovative and creative and want like a place to kind of design and build. And I don't think we get to do that all the time in class. So your extracurricular can be opportunity for you to build yourself and your skills.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. For me, I'm part of SESOC, obviously, running this podcast, which is a delight. But also, like, I'm part of UW Blueprint, where we do software development for nonprofits in Waterloo. And I've learned so much. And it's come up so many times during interviews. It's honestly amazing. So for those who are like a little bit more technically inclined and want to learn new technologies, Blueprint is definitely something you should check out. The one thing, when I was listening to all of your responses, I'm like, how do you even balance all this? Like, this must be a challenge, right? And many of the first years, incoming first years also wanted to know, how do you guys balance all these extracurriculars?
Yeah. So I think in high school, we all had this mentality where it was like, the more extracurriculars we did, like the more prepared we would be. And I think a lot of us probably burned ourselves out doing that. But then in university, I think it's more about doing one or two that either you're really, really interested in or you think will really help you develop your soft skills and your technical skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure, like scheduling helps. But I'm not gonna lie. Because it was first year, I had just gone to university, so I hadn't gotten like a grip on everything yet. So I was cutting some corners here and there with regards to like attendance and other things. But like mostly, you just have to trust yourself. I don't think there's like a formula to time management. If you like doing something enough, you'll make time for it. And that's just that. I mean, you really just have to trust yourself. It'll work out one way or another. That's what I've learned. Yeah.
My philosophy on this has shifted a lot since I've been in university. Like you said, Talia, a lot of the things we do, we don't have a purpose for doing them in high school. Like we do, it's to get into university, but it's not, it's to seek some kind of like personal growth. I remind myself a lot that like we're going to be in our 20s. It's a time where you grind, you explore, you try new things. And that means that like, you're going to fail at a lot of things and you're going to try something and figure out you can't manage it. And I think that as long as you aren't like making huge commitments, like do it piece by piece. That's my advice is like, say you want to join a club, like go to a couple meetings, see what kind of like scope it out, think about like, could you actually see yourself like being on the exec for this club? If it's like a studying thing, like track yourself and see like, okay, can I do well putting this much effort in? Can I spend a couple more hours working on a side project? Or like, or you know, like maybe you sleep a little bit less, but you're loving what you do. And I'm like very, very like a big proponent of mental health, like make sure you sleep enough, but also like it's the time we're supposed to like be like working our hardest and thriving off what we're doing. And I think like your time management kind of falls if you're really passionate about what you're doing. You're like, okay, I have to get this done because I want to get it done. And I think that's my philosophy on it. And I don't think I'm very good at time management, frankly. I don't think a lot of us are great, but we're learning and we're trying to figure out how to manage it. So also like I use Notion here's a good tip, like roadmap. Like I roadmap my weeks out and I'm like, okay, in this stream, like chem stream, I have this stuff. In this stream, I have this stuff. And I just like block it out. And at least I can like visually see the things I have to do. And then I can try and block them.
Mm-hmm. You know, one really cool tip that I read this from an article about Elon Musk, because he's like known as like the guy that does everything. And one of the things he talked about is time blocking, where he like limits the amount of time you spend on a certain task in a day. And that has been super helpful in university. Like I can get through a lot more things because I put like these deadlines, mini deadlines, and I've just been able to get things done so much quicker. So yeah, roadmapping, time blocking, those are definitely tips first years can use. But let's now segue into now Waterloo's biggest attraction, which is co-op. And I think like almost all the questions that I got from the forum were about co-op. So this is obviously something that people really want to know about. Does someone just want to give us a general overview of how co-op works, because I did not know how it worked until like the second week in January. I had no idea how it worked. So does someone want to try to give a explanation of it?
Yeah, I can try to say something on this, but correct me if I'm wrong, because I can't fully remember. So I think it was by the end of the first month, there's a deadline to submit 50 applications. So that includes, the only thing that you really have to put is your resume and maybe a cover letter, depending on the position. And then for the next month or so, interviews start rolling out. And then by the third month, then you get the results for the main round. So you get matched, which is like your employer has given you an offer so that they've ranked, so like they've ranked you as one, like their first choice, or you've gotten ranked. So you've been selected from 2 to 10 as their choice, or you haven't been ranked. And so you haven't, like, you don't really have a chance for that position. And then after that, you go into continuous round if you haven't matched. Oh, and matching means that if you were ranked as one by your employer and then you also rank them as one, then that's an automatic match. And then you can also match if they give you like a high ranking and you give them a high ranking. And then for that position, the sum of your rankings is the lowest. And then so after main round, you have continuous round, which is basically the same thing as main round. But I think you get up to 300 applications. And then that's basically
it. And yeah, continuous round, what you experience in the first, second, and third month is compressed into a week. And that repeats every single week. And also, like, for any first years listening, this is something like we probably aren't like the most confident in. So definitely check out Waterloo's official resources on that. But that's something you should definitely check before you start applying. But let's go into that. How are your experiences applying for co-op? How are your experiences with Waterloo Works? And also, if you were to go back, what kind of things would you have changed about your approach?
So as for my experience this time around, I maxed out my applications in main round. A few interviews started to come in. And this is also another thing that you should be aware of, is that it might seem like everybody else is getting interviews and you aren't at first. I know, like, the day after, like, the, like, submissions closed for applications, like, I think, like, half of the people I knew were like, oh, I already got an interview, and I was, like, so, like, down about it for the rest of the week. But, I mean, they'll start coming in, so don't you worry. But I had a couple interviews, and I honestly didn't know what to expect, so I just prepared the best that I could. And then I went to them. Some of the companies had me do like online like tests, like if you will, like different like tasks for you to do that sort of test your technical knowledge, which I didn't have much. But anyways, I went to the interviews, and my strategy was, because I mean it was my first time, was instead of emphasizing like my technical capabilities, because I knew they wouldn't be able to compare to people who had already had prior experience, and I had never done like a technical job before either. And because of that, my strategy was just to be the most like genuine and good person I could be in the interview. So really being a good communicator, explaining my thoughts, being really nice, just showing that I'm a good person to work with, which is ultimately, I think, the most important thing. Above all, you have to be a good person to work with. And I think that's what you want to show. I didn't get ranked one in the main round, but luckily, for me, I ranked all of the jobs that had ranked me one, and then I ended up getting matched with four just out of luck that happened to be the one that with the lowest sum. And this is another thing that first you should keep in mind, is that even if you do get ranked, there's a possibility that you won't get matched. Yeah, that's that. I went to the resume critiques. I went to the SESOC resume critiques. I got some good feedback. And then I had decent grades going in, so that was also probably a factor. It got mentioned to me once. But other than that, it wasn't too important.
So I think that I had like a pretty conventional first year experience for Waterloo Works. I had a couple interviews. I didn't get any rankings actually in main round. And that was like a big blow to like my self-esteem. Also, it was just like, it's that imposter syndrome. It kind of, like, you feel like, do I belong? And then the next week, I had an interview, and it went great, and I was so happy. And then I kind of, like, felt it in my bones. And I think that's, like, a bad thing to say. Like, I don't know, but I thought I would get ranked, and then I ended up getting ranked one the next day, and I ranked them, we matched, and then on the Friday I had the job. My new tip is don't use Waterloo Works if you can, and I know that's like a really unconventional tip, but I have talked to so many people, and I think Waterloo Works is great, like use it, but don't rely on it. Look elsewhere too. I have some friends who got great jobs through like resume database entering, if you identify as a minority, or like talking to friends and family, like using your connections, if you're in a club, referrals. I have seen a lot of people get jobs this term because of referrals. Like even once they went into Waterloo Work, getting a referral at that company helps you a lot, because in some cases I know it'll help you get the interview or help you get like put to the top of the list. So use your network, I think, is my big tip for using Waterloo Works. Like leverage it, because especially if you're trying to get lucrative roles, like referrals go a long way. And my other tip for Waterloo Works, or from my experience, was you want to talk to people who have gotten good jobs. So like identify people who you know would be willing to give you a resume critique, and like listen to them, change the wording, like little things you don't know, but they know what from experience they're looking for. Because of COVID, just don't be like too selective. Like I don't think we're in a position to be selective. I have friends who went through recruiting this year, and they said that it was like half of them still don't have jobs, and we're almost at the end of the term for next fall. So it's like sobering, but I think it's a time to kind of work hard and be happy with what you get.
There's one part of your response I was like, I would disagree with. And it's like that mentality of like, take anything that comes to you. I don't actually subscribe to that. I don't think people should just do that, because there are certain jobs out there that you think like you just apply it to there, and it almost seems like a waste of an application, because at the end, you know, you wouldn't want to work there in the end. So like, yes, like don't be too selective, but also only apply to jobs that you actually would want to do, because then it's just like, why are you putting in that effort and wasting an application?
I think I actually agree with Arena, but only because right now, because of COVID. So I was going to say that, like, because there are so few jobs compared to before, if you get a job through Waterloo Works and it's not something that you would like absolutely hate, or that you know you would absolutely hate, then I think you should go for it, because the risk is so much higher now. And then, yeah, like I feel like if you were to go into continuous, like I think there are a lot of other things you could be working on, as opposed to getting a job and then like foregoing it and then taking that risk. And then there's also the risk of COVID. So yeah. It's just like too many.
How like in general, Talia, how are your experiences with Waterloo Works? Like, do you have any sort of interview horror stories or anything? Because I'm like curious about that too.
Okay, I actually, it's not that bad, but I do have like a kind of horror story. So it was the first Waterloo Works interview I had. It was through a WebEx call, right? And so I prepared, like, I was always told, like, make sure you look as if you're in a live interview, like with the person. So I did my best, but then when the actual interview came on, I thought that they couldn't see me, even though my camera was on. Like, I don't really know what I was thinking. So I guess the way that I portrayed myself, like I was looking around randomly, like I looked really stressed, and it wasn't a way that I would have put myself out there had I been there in person. And then I realized at the end, like, oh shoot, like they probably could have seen me. And I was lucky enough that didn't impact my interview. Like, I actually got the job, but then it was kind of out of luck though. So yeah, make sure that you remain professional, like assume that the interviewer is, that they can see you.
My Wi-Fi cut out in the middle of my interview, and it was at TC, like at Tatum Center, and I was so confused. And they're only like, my interview was really short, that interview, and so I lost like 5 minutes out of like my interview, and it was just like the flow. It was in the middle of me solving like the algorithm problem, so my flow got cut off, and it was just like awkward, and like I just didn't know what to say. I was already nervous. So sometimes things like that happen, and you just have to like kind of like go with that, them as best as you can.
Like, actually looking back at Waterloo Works, it, like, Arena, you mentioned this, how there are like certain things you would do differently, like reaching out externally, which I also agree with. But were there any big lessons that you guys learned about your experiences that you would want other first years to know?
Yeah, sure. So this kind of goes back to accepting what you're given. I think that because of COVID, it would be just like a good idea right now to, if you have an offer in main round, to just accept it. Like in my personal experience in main round, I ended up with an offer and a rank, but it just so happened that the one that I was ranked for, I actually wanted that job more than the other one. But then like I thought about it and I was like, I think I'll just take the one that I was given the offer for, because it's like, I think if somebody wants you to work there, you will probably feel more comfortable working there than if like you were somebody's fourth choice, you know what I'm saying? If I had chosen the other one, then first of all, I would be subjecting myself to the risk of like the rank match system. And then also that other job might have gotten canceled, because the one that I was ranked first for, it was a company with a very reputable co-op program, so it was pretty stable even if there was COVID. So like that would just be my suggestion.
Don't sweat about getting those interviews. Like you might see other people in class just be like, woohoo, got one, don't worry, no need to fret, it'll come. And then also, yes, working outside of Waterloo Works is also totally viable. If you have connections, like that's a bonus. And just reaching out externally is also a great way to find jobs if Waterloo Works is not coming through for you.
I kind of have like one thing I can think of now, which is like, if you want something to do, like look at your resume, look at other people's resumes and see where, like, say you have somebody you want to like be, like I say this, like if you have like somebody who is in the role you want to have, like look at their LinkedIn resume and think about like what things they have been doing. I'm not saying to do it just because of that, but a lot of the times in technology, there are certain frameworks you might have to know. Like say you want to do backend, a lot of them want Django or Flask or some experience with like MVC systems. And like go and like search that up, because those skills are not taught in class. Like they don't, like I don't think we learned that until a couple years into our degree, but the roles we apply for typically look for like a full stack job will look for that. So that's one tip I have, like look at what you need to do to build your resume, and then your resume will reflect that, and those are indispensable. And my other thing is I have learned a lot about networking. I think every other university that isn't Waterloo, like to get a job, you need to use your network. And I think that Waterloo Works is great. And it also like, it's really like super useful tool. But like Talia said, in this like economy and in this environment, it's funny to say that, but in this environment, you have to like be incredibly aggressive. Like we're recruiting in a recession. We're recruiting in a place where a lot of places have job freezes right now. And it's not a bad thing. It just means like as adults, we have to figure out how to like best position ourselves to get a job. And I think that if you network frequently, you reach out to people, you might have like past employers who could connect you with somebody else. I'm in an incubator where I'm getting like a ton of networking experience with different mentors who I'm like just staying in contact with, because one day maybe I can ask them for a job. So do that, and don't limit yourself to Waterloo Works, because this time around, I think assuming you're going to get a job from it is a little bit dangerous. I'm not saying that you won't, but like a healthy sense of caution is a good idea.
I just remember what I was going to say. On the Waterloo subreddit, they always had this big resume critique mega thread. And then I think a really useful tip is to go through all of them, save the really good ones, and also save the really bad ones, and then just sort of study what gives off that vibe about each of them, and then apply that to your own resume, because I think that'll really help. And then also, this is another really big thing about joining clubs and like sort of getting to know as many people as possible, because right now, like it's now at a point where like I know people who are like, hey, like I worked at this place and I can give you a reference, and that is really comforting and also very useful. So definitely take the time to like meet lots of people in a genuine way and like connect with them.
So actually pretty much wraps up the podcast. I actually only had one last question, which is if you could describe your first year software engineering experience in 3 words, what would it be?
I talked to my mom about this. We were like, okay, what do you think? So we came up with turbulent. I think that is a good reward word for it. We also came up with rewarding. I think that this program has really, really bad lows, but extremely high and gratifying highs. And I've loved it. And the last word I would describe it as is like fun. I have had so much fun. I'm still having fun. And I also thought that kind of counteracted the whole idea that Waterloo is boring. So rewarding, fun, and turbulent.
Let's see. I did have a lot of fun, so I would also put fun up there. So fun, I think crazy, not necessarily in the sense that like it was turbulent, but like this whole like wash of like new experiences. And then also really friendly, like just like I met so many great people, and that's what really made the first year experience for me. So crazy, fun, and also friendly.
I think I would have to say new, because of course like all the experiences are very new. Challenging, but not, even though there were a lot of moments that were very difficult, there were some good challenges too, like very inspirational challenges, like learning new technologies, meeting new people, and maybe like encouraging, I guess, like even though there were a lot of down, like sad times, there was also like this support network. There were also some good things that happened, so it was like all hope is not lost.
I didn't really think about it. intense, fun, crazy. Yeah, those would be my three.
So it sounds like we're describing a really fun party or something. It's like, oh, it's crazy, wild.
That's not what SE is, though. Well, thank you, Arena, Talia, and Zengmao, for joining me on this podcast. I really hope that the first years took something out of this, because I think there are some awesome tidbits of advice and stories that anyone, not even just first years, would benefit from. Well, I'll see you next time on Sessions by SE.